Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to Kinda Funny's HBO's The Last of Us Breakdown. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
It can't be for nothing, Tim.
It can't be for nothing. We also have the big daddy himself, Greg Miller.
Endure and survive, Tim.
Endure and survive. And joining us for what feels like his millionth Last of Us spoiler cast here on Kinda Funny, it is Last of Us creator, Neil Druckmann.
Hello, boys. Good to see you all.
Good to see you, Neil. How are you feeling?
Oh, man. It's such a weird question because I should say, oh, my God, it feels amazing. The reception's been so good for the show. But somehow, and Craig is the same way, it's just causing us anxiety as we think about where we need to go and what we need to do and all the stuff that's in front of us. So awesome and full of anxiety at the same time.
I love that so much. Thank you for spending your Monday with us, the hours after the finale of Last of Us airing on HBO. Neil, you're joining us. Thank you so much for that. Again, thank you all for watching us, whether it's live on youtube.com/kindoffunny or later on podcast services around the globe. Search for Kind of Funny Screencast, the latest in TV, movie, and trailers. We're going to be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to be, just like our Patreon producers Nathan Lamoth, Tripod Plus Plus, Trent Berry, James Hastings, and Casey Andrew have done. Today we're brought to you by Honey, but I'll tell you about that later. Neil, here we are, hours removed from the finale. You're saying you're feeling a little anxious about the future, but what was your favorite moment of last night in particular?
Ooh, I don't know if you're asking about the show or just my experience of watching the show.
Your experience more than anything, I want to know.
Yeah, so I went over to Craig's house. He has like this beautiful in-house movie theater. And I was there with Ashley and Troy and Merle and Hallie and Shannon. So it was kind of nice to like all these people that come from the game world that have entered the show. We were all watching it together and we're crying and laughing together. And it was just, I was feeling very nostalgic of like just what a crazy journey this has been, and just I guess very thankful to just like when it ended, I could see how proud they were. And again, nothing these past few months have made me feel more joy than seeing all the people that have dedicated years of their lives for this thing and how proud they are of the show.
Did it feel comfortable at all to releasing the game? Like, this is interesting. Interestingly enough, your second time now releasing The Last of Us. How is it?
Some would say.
But like, how did it feel releasing this version of the game? How does it feel releasing? This version.
It's very very similar. In that you kind of have the same wants of wanting to make everybody that was on this journey proud. Part of the anxiety is that you know when you release a game, there's this like incredible high when everybody's playing it and talking about it, and then you crash, and then you have like this kind of postpartum. And now with the show, I got to have that experience week to week, like as it was releasing a game every week, and then seeing what the reaction will be, what people say, what will they think, what are they expecting to happen next. And it's just been just an amazing experience. I don't have quite, as you can tell, I don't have the words for it. I'm kind of stumbling through this. But it's just been, like, I love these characters in this world so much, so to see how much people love it, even outside of people that have worked on it, it's just been amazing. And every Monday, my mom calls me, and she's like, oh my God, like, and she would ask me all these questions, and like, last week's episode aired, and she was like, so, is there supposed to be like a giraffe thing? Like, is that the next season? When is that happening? I'm like, Mom, do you have any idea what I do? Like, for the past 10 years, any idea what I've done? But it's just been cool that she's been getting to experience it. And I have like a bunch of friends and family that have never played the game that now have an appreciation for The Last of Us. And it's, that's been really cool.
Neil, here's my question. Last time you were on Kind of Funny, and I believe this is correct. I can't imagine there was another one, but it was Last of Us Part 2 spoiler cast. We went through every detail of the game, obviously. That's what we're doing with the show here. But that, I felt, hit at such a different time. And my question for you is, has the mainstream reaction to The Last of Us on HBO kind of refilled your cup? Like, Last of Us Part 2, right, came out, and it was divisive. And obviously, you guys want a reaction that was a big part of it. But, you know, talking to you and Troy and Ashley and Laura, there was this, like, man, we've kind of been through the ringer with this experience. And it is that kind of emotional tale. But to be here, yeah, and it is, like, you know, everybody jokes around on TikTok and Twitter every time of, like, the non-gamers watching this show and the gamers being like, you have no idea what's coming. But it's been such a celebration, I feel, Last of Us. Has that been something to wrestle with?
I have been kind of reflecting on that because, yeah, that period was a dark period, which was not only, like, the leaks that happened with Part 2 and some of the reaction and some of, like, being caught in the middle of this media culture war in ways we couldn't even anticipate. At times that felt very overwhelming, and add, let's not forget COVID on top of that,
yeah,
that we weren't able to like celebrate with the team or do anything like in person. So just everyone's kind of depressed and playing this depressing game. And it has been a celebration, and like, look, I was nervous. I never released anything that will be reviewed by Hollywood journalists and talked about in kind of these mainstream channels. So I had no idea what to expect. Are they going to tear it apart more than game journalists? It turns out gamers are the most critical motherfuckers out there. So that was quite easy in comparison. I don't quite mean this the way it will sound, but it was like, oh, The Last of Us is cool again in a way that, you know, the conversation around Part 2 was just so intense. I kind of forgot and it's hard not to focus on just the negative things that people are saying. It's like you could get 100,000 people saying really positive things, and it just takes 10 to say really negative things for the way my mind works, to just fixate on those 10. But here, I guess the numbers were just so overwhelming. It was so positive. And the week-to-week conversation, the fan art, the cover, people doing like cover songs from like songs we would put on the show and like each episode, and you could tell the like the anticipation for every episode that's coming up. It was really cool. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know about the giraffe, like the moment in the game being so special, and then seeing it in the show, and it being this like amazing moment that hits just as hard, seeing that it's a real giraffe. like, so I want to hear about the real giraffe first. How was that?
Yeah, that was because we're like, just the logistics. Like the weird thing with live action that's very different from games is, you know, games we could just put a giraffe wherever we want, and we don't have to worry about unions or like when does
the giraffe union is so tough.
Move or how do you like? So the crew actually built like a blue screen set in the Calgary Zoo.
Oh, wow.
And there's a giraffe there that the actors went and kind of acted there. And then there was a set replacement done after the fact. And then there are some shots that are CG. But our VFX team were so amazing. There's so much VFX shots in the show that are just hard to tell are VFX, just because how well done it was.
So seeing the giraffe in real life, and in the show and in the game, it's such an important moment. Like I can imagine seeing the actual giraffe and knowing like, wow, this is the giraffe. Were there moments for you on the set where you're like, wow, this is my creation and it's real?
Every time I was on set, I felt this way. I actually wasn't there. I wasn't there for the giraffe shoot, but Craig, whenever I wasn't there, would always send me videos and screens and like, check this out. Oh my God, look at this. And just be like Bella petting the giraffe. And I'm just like watching this video in my iMessage, just crying. But yeah, I've talked about this a lot, but the first day I was on set, and it was shooting some of the Joel and Sarah stuff and Tommy at their house, like eating breakfast, and they had recreated Joel's house, and again the love and care that went into that recreation, the greatest of which was Sarah's room, that I had to take like this, like I take to take a Zoom call for Naughty Dog, and I'm looking for a quiet place, so I just went to Sarah's room and I'm just showing the guys. I'm like, look at the beds, look at the sheets, look at the posters. And I'm just kind of geeking out. And then I'm like, okay, let me get serious because I got to walk out the door and just give like people direction and stuff. but yeah, I was geeking out a lot. And I just had to kind of keep it under control and be professional.
So going back to Greg's question a bit about refilling the cup, seeing this version of The Last of Us, right? It being on the big screen, like Tim's talking about, right? Like seeing the fact that you guys put a draft in the game and now like fast forward 8 to 10 years later, you have an actual set, people working with a draft to like make this moment happen. Last week on Gamescast, we were talking a bit of the Super Nintendo World and how it was Timur Hussein who was talking about how he got to see Miyamoto kind of stand in like this thing that is the result of his creation, right? Many, many years ago, right? Sitting in the middle of like, oh shit, I made Mario happen. And now people are here physically enjoying Mario. For you, does the idea of now having The Last of Us TV show out, seeing it on the mainstream level, seeing it show up at SNL, does that do anything for you as a creative? Are you in a place now where you're like, oh man, let's do more. Like, I want to do everything now.
I don't know if I think about it like quite like that. Look, it definitely opens opportunities, and there's I'm actually really excited. There's a lot of people I met on the show or are fans of the show that are now more interested in games, and whether they're actors or directors or directors of photography that are really interested in playing around in games. And I'm like, oh, that's the stuff I'm really curious of. Like, how do we leverage? How do we get more interesting talent to come help us make new kinds of games? Yeah, I'm still taking it in, so I don't have a desire to say, oh, the next game we make has to be adaptable to another medium. That's
It needs to be a theme park.
So you're not playing for the theme park yet, is what you're saying.
I'd love a Last of Us ride. That would be amazing. So if anybody out there wants to make it, please contact us.
I'm sure Six Flags is beating that.
Hollywood Horror Nights, baby. Yeah.
Piggybacking off of that, Neil, right? The question of creating this world and doing this stuff, and then now really crossing over, right? Like, I think at the end of every episode of The Last of Us, when the, you know, director studio comes up and it's you, Craig, and the cast talking about it, I think it was like, maybe it took 5 episodes, but for the majority of the time, every time Jen would turn to me and go, can you believe we know him? Like, it was so crazy to see you in that HBO, you know, inside the actor studio that we've seen so many different times. Do we have to worry about you leaving games and going full Hollywood on us?
I don't think so. I love games too much. Look, I definitely have the bug, and I like playing in this other world now. But my first love is games. So I'm really curious about how do I take a lot of the lessons I've learned and how do we apply them on games, whether it's from a production standpoint or a creative standpoint or even a writing standpoint. There's a lot that I learned on the show. That I'm very excited to have been since I came back to Naughty Dog and been doing stuff. But no, I'm not going to go full Hollywood.
Okay. What would you say is the biggest lesson you learned?
Good question. Weirdly, organization. There's like the production pipeline for a TV show like this is so streamlined and so efficient. And the gates they kind of have to go through, or we are a bit more, you know, we fly more by the seat of our pants when we make stuff at Naughty Dog. And that is part of our superpowers, that we're very nimble and we could like pivot very easily. But I think we can be more organized. And I think that would just help us be more efficient with how much content we can create. But more so than that, even help with the work-life balance stuff that we've been working on for the past few years. I think there's a lot to learn there.
When it comes to remaking the story of The Last of Us in a different medium, months after, and the timelines of this is wrong, but release months after the remake of Last of Us Part 1, was there a time where you guys made the decision that the remake of Part 1 was going to be as faithful as it was and not adapt some of the show elements that you put for the show?
Yeah, for me, I wasn't as involved with the remake, but from a high level standpoint, it was important that we didn't use this as an opportunity to reinvent what The Last of Us was. It was just to like, let's get closer to the original vision as much as possible, which is, and sometimes I know that frustrated certain fans that they wanted Prone or they wanted Dodge, but I felt that would have created a different game. So it was important to just keep the feel of it, and the feel could be like mechanical feel or emotional feel, and just plus it in every possible way. There's little things, like we added the Mortal Kombat 2 poster into Ellie's room, but that felt relatively benign and we weren't making drastic changes. But yeah, it was very important to remain, to like plus it, be able to introduce it to a new audience, but not radically change it.
For the changes you made in the show, were they changes that you've had in your mind before, maybe even originally for the game, or were the majority of the big differences things that you're like, I'm making a show, this has to be different, so let's come up with how it works better here?
Yeah, when I started working with Craig, I have to back up for a second. So like when I saw Chernobyl, I was blown away. How well written that show is, the tone of it. And it's dealing with, this is a really challenging thing. It deals with really heavy subject matter and makes it engaging. So it's not just like a downer the whole time, even though like parts of it are a downer. That I knew if I'm going to bring someone that talented, like into the world of The Last of Us, I have to trust them. And that means I've never made a TV show. I don't know how to make a TV show. I know how to tell a story. I know how to write stuff. But, you know, it was done for this other medium that often has different requirements and needs than a TV show, that I entered it with a very open mind to say any idea that is pitched will be fully considered, no matter how radical or crazy it is. And then we should let the idea live or die by its own merits. Is it helping us tell the story authentically to what the story is, to how that story made you feel, not necessarily making it identical, but for this other medium. And that required certain changes. The most obvious of which is probably the removal of a lot of the action sequences that are required for a game, you know, when you need mechanical mastery and you're using those tools to create certain tensions or to create immersion, that had we translated those directly for the TV show, I believe it would have made it for, it would have made pretty boring sequences. So instead we said, okay, well, let's focus on what makes The Last of Us really stand out in this genre that, you know, there's so many like stories in this zombie genre, post-apocalypse genre. But what makes us special is just the relationships between Joel and Ellie, between Bill and Frank, between Henry and Sam. That's the consistent thing of The Last of Us. So that's where most of our effort should go.
You're talking about staying true to it, expanding on it, doing this. This is a spoiler cast about this show. So talk to me about the finale. Well, you know, we did our review of it a couple hours ago, available everywhere, screencast. And one of the things I was not surprised by and not let down by, but left wanting for, was I loved how the first episode, which I know is the first two kind of combined or whatever, but our first HBO episode expanded on what we already knew. And we got to see, you know, Ellie be tied to the radiator. We got to see more of what was going on behind the scenes here and there. Was there a desire, was there a script ever for the finale to get more into what was happening with the Fireflies, what was happening after they knocked out Joel, what went in there? Because I think it was so powerful in the beginning of that first episode to see beyond Joel's perspective, but then this felt very traditional to what we had in the game.
Yeah, not really. There was variations of scenes. There was more and less for like the Anna scene in the beginning, and sure, we talked quite a bit about that. So to us, that was the expansion, was the Ellie's mom scene, and getting to flesh up Marlene. And by doing that, then hopefully the Marlene stuff that happens later in the episode has more impact because you get to see how close she was to Anna. But beyond that, we didn't want any bloat, especially at the end. It was important that once like we get close to the end, it just like the moments hit one after the other, and it feels like you're just like, you're like Joel, you're going on this rush where it's like you can't even like think and contemplate too much. It's just, things are just happening. And then you're at the end, and the end catches you off guard. That we didn't have a lot of conversation about it, but my feeling would be like, if had we expanded it too much, it could have ruined that feeling that we were after.
So you've been so close to this franchise for a decade plus now, and there's been so many kind of expansions on it in ways that probably you didn't even know were going to happen. Like, I'm sure you didn't always know there was going to be a part two. But having part one end in 2013, knowing where part two goes in 2020, and then here being able to get another chance at doing the story in a different way, with those final shots, with the end of the of where Ellie is as a character, in your mind and with the way that it's been portrayed, do you think that those are all the same from the inside, from Ellie's perspective, that like what she believes is going on when she says okay, does that okay mean the same thing?
Yeah, I think so. While this, like, Ellie and Joel are different at times and, deviates and have experienced different things, that moment, we very much, the conversation that Craig and I had was very reflective of what we were going for in the game. And Craig loved the ending so much, he didn't want to mess with it beyond just maybe very practical things of where the sunlight is or what is the forest we have in front of us. Those sometimes will require changes of where you put the camera or pacing or editorial choices like that. But he very much wanted to keep the ending intact from the game.
I love that because, the conversation we were having today on the show was the idea that in the in the game, Ashley's performance and Ellie in the game felt like, okay, like, I don't believe you, but I love you, and I'm going to let this go, or at least try to let it go. Whereas the scene last night, right, with Bella felt a little bit like, okay, I don't believe you, and I love you, but I can't let this go. Or it felt like there was something more brewing with her. We obviously are going to the same destination with both. It just felt like a difference in the portrayal.
I mean, that's the nature of having different actors interpret sure. the material and just how they perform it. It's just what feels natural for them in the moment.
Well, that was the same way, I think, when we were talking about, Pedro's Joel versus, Troy's Joel in the game, where, when we were playing Joel and we are killing Firefly after Firefly after Firefly and dying and restarting and doing the whole thing and trying to figure out the right route, like, you're so hung up on it that I don't think you realize how fucked up that is. Whereas last night watching, it was like, oh, this is fucked up.
Yeah, absolutely. I really liked all the part two kind of teases, or like teases isn't even the right word, kind of like just setting of like, seeing Jackson and it being as fleshed out as it was here, getting introduced to some of the characters or like hinted at and all that. What were some of your what was the intention behind that? And like, where did you decide to like draw the line of like, for the finale, not going too far into spelling things out?
Yeah. When we're making The Last of Us, the first game, the way games are written is a little bit different, where on TV show, at least the way Craig likes to work and HBO, is there's most of the writing is done before we enter production. So we know exactly what we're making, and the different directors we bring in can start their pre-production process with close to final scripts. On the game, because we're finding the fun, we're finding the how would you make these mechanics engaging, and there's a theoretical element to it that you then have to prove, we write as we go, and constantly the writing is being inspired and influenced by where the mechanics land. So, I think I've talked about this in the past, like Ellie used to not kill anybody until the end of the story, and just with the way the mechanics were coming together, just we couldn't sustain that, and it felt like you didn't care as much about Ellie, so the story changed where she killed very early on so she could be engaged with you in the combat loops. Sorry, what was the question? I went on this track and
The Last of Us 2, the siege towards it.
Thank you. As we're writing, we can kind of like go back in time and like adjust things early on and then jump around. So once we know where the story's going, we can work backwards from there and lay a lot of setups and track towards that ending. But we can only do it so much because we don't know where the story goes afterwards. So then we make Last of Us 2, and we try the best we can to make it all consistent and to say, okay, here are things that felt like set up so we could pay off later in the story. When making the show, we know Left Behind. We know Last of Us Part 2. So there are things like we could have Marlene talk about Riley early on because we have a better understanding of who Riley is because Left Behind has already come out. We know where a lot of the season 2 and 3 will go. So we could start laying things in earlier. And to Tim, I think this was your question earlier, of like, are there things that we wanted to do that end up not making the game? One of the things we wanted to do in the game and just couldn't do it because we ran out of time and money is we wanted to go into Jackson. So if you look at The Last of Us 1 art book, there's all this concept art of the inside of Jackson because that's where we originally wanted to do. And then we couldn't pull it off. So it felt like the show gave us this other opportunity. It's like, well, it actually makes more sense to go into Jackson instead of the dam to show this thriving society. And here's this thing that you could come back to. And once we're already inside, well, it makes sense to show Shimmer, or it makes sense to show like some of the locations from Last of Us Part 2, or this cameo that might or might not be this character that everybody thinks it is.
it better be Neil.
Like, even not that one. I've seen something going around from the finale of it. There's a shadowy, seemingly braided figure running off.
I'll kill that rumor. That is not Abby.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much for that. There's a Kind of Funny Games Daily headline for you for tomorrow. You.
So how was the balance thematically, right? Tim's talking about the seeds that you put in there toward Last of Us Part 2, right, and conveying that in future seasons. Last of Us Part 1 versus 2 feel like thematically they're in very different places, right? Last of Us 1 feels very hopeful and loving, and I know in your guys' like podcast and in the post shows for Last of Us, you guys talk about like, Last of Us this season is about love, right? In every episode, we want to portray the idea of love between two characters, right? Whether it's Bill and Frank or Henry and Sam or Joel and Ellie or whatever, like makeup of the characters, right? We want to portray the idea of love versus Last of Us Part 2 feels so rooted in the idea of the cycle of violence and vengeance and rage. And there's very different tones, I feel like, between the two games. Was there care taken in figuring out how to seed in the elements from Last of Us Part 2 into Part 1 without losing sort of the soul of what makes Part 1 Part 1?
Yeah, that's an astute kind of observation that we talked a lot about not only the first game, but the second game, and what do those relationships look like, and what is the motivation for a lot of stuff in the second game. I assume we could just go full spoiler here. Everybody 100%. Here is a gamer. And that in those conversations, we talked a lot about, even though the second game is more about this obsessive pursuit of justice, the motivation for it is still love. It's like, how far would you go to avenge the one you love? So therefore, going back into the show and knowing that's like a major theme in the second story, that there was ways to start hinting at it and speak to that theme, that this idea of love can lead to wonderful and terrible things. And it was always part of the DNA of The Last of Us. It just, the ratios were a bit different, that you're right. The first game is a bit more of a positive expression of love, of like including someone, protecting them, making sure they feel safe and they have a bright future in front of them. Whereas the second game is more about the destructive nature of love, of like destroying things to try to honor this person that you love. But it was important to say, it's all a bit messy. There's some percentage of both in both stories. It's just the percentage just flips as we get into part two.
What was your favorite part of working on the show? Was it more the producing side of it? You got to direct an episode? Like, what element was your favorite?
Mm. Good question. I never thought about that. I think it's very similar to games, that, and there's different people that like different parts of production. I tend to enjoy the very, very beginning where it's blue sky and we can talk, like anything goes. And it's like when anything go, it's really hard to make choices. But those early choices you make feel very thrilling. It's like the thing takes shape. And then I like the very, very end when it all comes together and you're putting the finishing touches, and it's like when you feel like it's already good and you're on the verge of making it great. And it's like, oh, if we just put this Gustavo theme right here and we duck the audio down, okay, that makes it way more interesting. Or seeing the VFX starting to come together. So I would say, yeah, my mind probably jumps between those two. The middle is the worst. When you've shot everything and you're starting to edit stuff, it's the same as the middle of a game where your game is first all strung together and it's a piece of shit. And you're like, you just question everything. You're like, did we just make all the wrong choices to end up here? But then you do this enough and you have to trust the process to say, okay, no, it's just when you first string it together, it's rough. And then it's about polishing and refining and iterating. And it was, I already knew this from games because so much of the story can be found in the edit, but even more so I saw it exemplified in the show, of like, we would shape entire scenes by just like re-editing them and rethinking them. And, you know, sometimes even having reshoots to like add little snippets of things that we didn't quite have material that we needed.
Were there bits that you really wanted to make work from the game in the show that you ended up having to scrap at any of those levels? Specifically the him hanging upside down.
I was gonna say answer me this. All right. Do you believe
I love that every week this came up? We're like, okay, the next week they're gonna do the hanging upside down. Okay, no, next week. Okay. They're clearly gonna hang him up upside down at a hospital somewhere because they have to do the hanging upside down.
I whiffed on it today because I wanted to do at the end during the screencast, be like, you caught the Easter egg at the end, right? Which would just be him hanging for no reason. Is that an iconic moment to you, Neil? The hanging upside down of Joel.
Absolutely. There's Thank a bunch you. Of iconic moments that I love from the game that just didn't make sense for this version of the story of the show. There's the hanging upside down. There's the falling on the rebar where like Ellie is leading you now and we take away your mechanics and she's screaming at you and she's by trying to protect you. She's being angry and you see her kill a bunch of people for the first time. I love that sequence. It's one of my favorites from the game. It just didn't make sense for the show because just the body count, if we had done it the same, it just would have felt off. It would have felt weird. It would have felt less realistic than how grounded we're making the show. I hear you on the snare trap sequence. We'll put a lot of thought of it into the next season.
No, my big thing is, and I've been getting a lot of shit for this from people online because I said that it's iconic. Like, that is one of the iconic moments of Last of Us. Be like, I don't know, whatever, it's story beats. I'm like, yo, the story beats are iconic, but that is too. So I appreciate that you've confirmed what I thought, Greg Miller.
Fair enough. We stand down. The non-iconic side stands down.
I love it, man. So now here we are with Last of Us Season 1 done, Season 2 announced, it's coming, and obviously you're still working on games. Are you taking care of yourself? Are you worried that you're taking on too much with everything?
Yeah, I'm a little worried. there's definitely times where I feel burnt out, but I'm lucky that I work with a lot of people that I could trust, that I could give stuff to, like obviously my partner at Naughty Dog, Evan Wells. And we have a whole leadership group now that's been expanded, that they take care of stuff when I'm not around. There's more creative directors and game directors at Naughty Dog that can take care of stuff and more writers when I'm not around. And likewise on the show, Craig was the primary showrunner. I was co-showrunner with him, but he was there on set way more than me. So it is about trying to strike the right balance. But I do have to take some stuff off my plate pretty soon, I think.
You talked about a bit of the stress earlier on. For you, is there a pressure to make another Last of Us, right? Like, I feel like Naughty Dog in the last about decade and a half has had an Uncharted and a Last of Us, and now there's an Uncharted movie and a Last of Us TV show, all of which are very successful. Do you feel like you got to keep hitting these home runs? Like, I got to make another Last of Us to, like, be another big IP that PlayStation can promote and support in this way?
I am very lucky that I don't have to think like that. That I joined a studio that was already so successful that we could be kind of prima donnas and just do whatever we want. I know not everybody has that privilege, but it's not something I take lightly. So it's like at the end of every project, we purposefully explore several different projects. Some of them might be a sequel, and then a bunch of new ideas. And then we really feel like where do our passions lie? Because that's the fire that has to keep, that has to sustain for years to come. And if you pick the wrong projects, and then you burn out from that idea because you weren't that passionate about it 2 years into it on a 4-year project, you're fucked. That's how you, I think, make mediocre anything. If you lose your excitement for it. So. I know the fans really want Last of Us Part 3. I hear about it all the time. And all I could say is that, look, we're already into our next project. So the decision has already been made. I can't say what it is, but that's the process we went through, that there was a lot of consideration of different things, and we picked the thing we were most excited for.
And factions is somewhere in there. Not that I'm fishing. I'm not fishing. I'm just saying we're still getting factions.
The Last of Us multiplayer game is our next big title, and you will hear much more about it later this year, and I'm stoked for it. It's
same.
It's now that one's like an interesting experience for me personally, because this is the first Last of Us game that I'm not the primary writer, I'm not the director, so I get to see it more from the side and play more of a producer role and more of a mentor role. And that to me is really exciting. What the team has put together is so cool. And again, it's very different than what I would do because it's made by different people. But that to me is part of the exciting, is to get to see other people play in this world in a leadership role, and see how it comes together. I can't wait. I can't wait to be able to show it off.
No, we can't either.
Again, going back to the pressure thing, right? Not to like stress you out this entire episode, but for season two, we talk about, again, like back in 2020, that game comes out in a depressing time. It's a very like depressing game, right? Fantastic game, but it is emotionally taxing. And you saw the divisiveness and like some, and how it was received by a lot of people. Is that a thing that stresses you out for the TV show, like going into the future seasons, you know, coming off of season one, which has been across the board, everybody loves it. You know, we're loving it. It's getting good reviews and all this stuff. Do you worry, I guess, from a stress level about season two and the future of The Last Wish show?
Not really. I stress about just making something that's good. I don't stress as much about whether as many people will like it or not. My thought process is always kind of like what I was talking before. It's like, we got to make something we're passionate about. That's the highest priority for us. Whether people like it or not, that's out of our control. I can't control that. And if I try to like try to engineer something that I think, okay, here's a story that the most people will like, I'm bound to fail, because now I'm no longer making decisions based on my own gut. I'm trying to second guess someone else's gut or someone else's taste. In my experience, that leads to failure. My motivation is always like, look, I want this thing to be successful for the people that pay our bills. Right? I want PlayStation to be really profitable from all of our games. I want HBO to make bank on this show so they feel comfortable to trust us to just do whatever we want to do next and give us the right budget and time to do it properly. So I do care about success from that respect, but not that it needs to achieve the same kind of success or the same broad success that season one has achieved.
Jumping off of that, like something that I just love that we're in this timeline, because when this show was announced a couple years ago, you know, that was at a different time when it came to video game adaptations and hearing about movies, hearing about shows. They'd get announced sometimes and we'd be like, sure, I'll believe it when I see it. Here we are now, years later, we've seen this show. It happened. And not only did it happen, it was on HBO. It got the premier flagship Sunday night spot. Craig Mazin was involved. You directly, Neil, were involved in this way more than we normally see game adaptations at all. Gustavo was involved. This felt just so authentically Last of Us. It felt like it was every single thing that needed to line up for this to be a success happened, and then you brought the passion and talent to like commit to that. Are you seeing now with the success of this, I imagine many awards are going to be won from this, the Emmys, the this, the that, all that. Does that excite you for season two, where you're like, we came up to the plate, home run, now we get to go even bigger?
There is, look, the second game, from set piece, from the number of characters, from how complex the story is more ambitious than the first game. And the success of the first season absolutely affords us, you know, bigger budget, more time. Those are the things that are important to, like, do it properly. So, right, so we can consider the scripts, consider the people we're bringing to be part of our team, consider the pre-production. I am very, very excited for the stuff we have planned for the second season, that especially for people that wanted more Infected. Well, just get ready.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome. So I know, real quick, I don't go for it, Greg.
No, I'm screwing with you. Go with it.
All right. I know, obviously, nothing's confirmed yet. You don't know anything, but we've seen a lot of talk from different interviews and stuff that season two will not be the entirety of part two, at the very least. Do you and Craig and anyone else involved have it in your minds? Do you know the answer? Like, do you know what season two is going to be already?
Yes, to a large degree. And some ideas of the following season, but even though that's way kind of looser.
Is that confirmed? Is the season three locked in yet?
No, we're only renewed for season two. But you know, we've gone on the record to say that game two is bigger than one season.
Yeah. Tie HBO's hands. They have to do it. I'm sure they'll want to too. And so this is a weird one, right? I feel like I've interviewed you so many times, Neil, for video games, and that's always a harder one to look into the future of. But
no, wait, sorry to interrupt you. Do you remember the first time we spoke? I was thinking about that today.
On camera or like just in general?
Just in general. It was an interview. It was on the phone.
Oh, for Beyond?
And, well, do you remember what project it was for?
Jack and Daxter.
No, was it Uncharted 2?
It was around Uncharted 2. It was for the Uncharted motion comic.
Oh.
That is the most Greg Miller thing ever.
Hell yeah, yeah, yeah. And you were like, this guy sucks at interviews. I'll never talk to him again. Here we are, decades later. But when I talk to you about projects...
I interrupted your question.
No, I love it. I love a good throwback. God, I forgot all about that. Was the interview good? Did you enjoy it?
I don't know. I think I was too nervous to like. It was like one of my first interviews. I'm sure. Like, oh.
Did you know who I was at the time? We're like, oh my God, Greg Miller.
Oh, big star.
This guy.
Of course. You're Greg Miller. The Greg Miller.
You were like, oh, I'll never be bigger than this guy. Here, you fucking Hollywood bowl at the Grove. whatever my stupid jokes were today. No. My question for you, with video games, usually it's, first off, I know super annoying when you guys release a game or are about to release a game and then everybody's like, and what about the next thing? And you're like, that's 5 years, 6 years, that could completely change, blah, 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 blah. For this one, it feels weird to talk to you about the show because we already know, obviously, what happens in part two, let alone that season two's already been announced. So I have three questions about season two that aren't, I swear, gotcha questions. They're just obviously educated questions because we know the game and the material so well. And so I'll start with this. When Last of Us Part Two came out originally, you have, of course, Pearl Jam's Future Days in there. An amazing song that is like the narrative backbone of the entire thing. We keep coming back to it in heartbreaking ways and doing all these things. I remember when the game dropped, internet sleuths came for you. We're like, well, actually, that song wouldn't have been out yet because of this, because of the way Outbreak Day happened. And you said, well, actually, they performed it live. Joel was such a super fan. He watched the video and memorized it and learned how to play it. Do you have, are you going to try to pull
this
some?
This does feel like a gotcha question. Keep going.
But my question is like, are you going to have to, since the different timeline now, are you already thinking for part two? Are you going to have to replace that song? Are you going to have some other narrative answer for it? Or do you not want to answer this question? I understand.
I can tell you we haven't made a decision. We have talked about it for those exact reasons that you've mentioned that now it makes no sense for Joel to know that song. Now we could say, okay, it's a parallel dimension.
Totally.
And the song came out earlier and there's ways, but that feels a little bit like a cheat. I will say that Pearl Jam specifically has now like even more so like been ingrained into the story and the world of The Last of Us that if we don't do that song, well, there's other songs that we could play with.
Yeah, like 2003's Get Low by Lil Jon and the East Side Boys.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Instead, just have Eddie Vedder survive, then he teaches Joel the song, and there you go. He learned it on the road, you know.
I want to get to your question in just a sec, Greg.
Two more! I have two more!
Two more questions, but before we do that, let's get a word from our sponsors.
Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. And thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. When you check out, the Honey button appears and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds, you see the fun little dancing guy. Honey searches for coupons and it finds you the best ones. And then you just watch the prices drop. We here at Kind of Funny have been using Honey for years, and it's helped us save thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to just set and forget and save. That's the best part. Honey doesn't just work on desktops. It works on your phone too. You just activate it on Safari on your phone. You save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny.
All right. So my next season two question that I swear isn't trying to spoil because we know what the fucking show... You know, for season one, you guys went above and beyond, I think, in honoring Troy and Ashley and getting that, you know, having Troy be such a big part of the David episode, have Ashley also be such a big part of last night's episode, both of them kill it, crush it, be so amazing, let alone, help me out.
Laura Bailey?
No, well, that's the question I'm going to. I'm thinking of
Merle.
Thank you. Yes, yes, yes. My question then becomes, though, for Laura Bailey last night. Of course, it was a big tweet Storm last night, when they're like, oh man, Laura Bailey was one of the doctors, one of the nurses, one of the doctors in the room last night. That's awesome. Blah 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 blah. And then of course you put up the amazing tweet of the text she sent you or whatever, posing over the dead body. My question that I is more leading than I want it to be, but was that a cameo or was that an introduction of a character? I guess like is and I I know that again, just like games, you've not made season two, so who knows what it'll actually end up on the screen, but. Was that a, hey, Laura, come be a friend and be in the background? Or was that, hey, Laura, you don't get killed in this episode or even flashbacks or whatever?
Yeah, so I will say Laura played one of the nurses in the last in the first game. And since then, we've changed, we recast that role, so you don't hear her voice twice. But it was more honoring what she did in the first game.
Gotcha.
We need to honor the obviously the great work she did in the second game, and I think in a different way.
Excellent. And then the conversation we had over and over again today, talking about season two and the fact that the news, or I guess, yeah, news, the quotes had been put out that you guys think it's two seasons for, or it's more seasons than just one season. Do you think, and I know this is, again, way more detail than you probably would want to give, but are you going to try to follow the same narrative structure? Do you think you have to shake it up for TV versus a video game? This is something we went around and around on this morning of how us, people who don't make anything, would take and translate the video game and the two major parts and the big breakpoint. And is it that simple of a season two and a season three, or do you try to integrate all the way through, or whatever you're comfortable saying on that?
Yeah, it's the structure of the story is obviously a big part of that story. So I could tell you that a lot of our conversations are about structure and where do we put things, and I can't say too much about that.
Sure, of course.
I could just say that the process is very, very similar to the first season, which is first just like kind of talking through the story as it stands, and then starting to talk about what are things we would want to keep exactly the same, what are things that just logistically aren't going to work and need to change, and what are some other things that you know, Craig might have ideas of wanting to change things because he feels like they might be better, it might be different, or something, some theme or idea he's really excited by that I always try to honor, again, because that's, he's my partner on this. And then we our process is like, we talk it through. So they say, okay, I want to make this big, let's say a big change here. Like, let's say, you know, like the Bill and Frank is a great example of that. That was a really big change. And like, okay, keep an open mind. The fate of the character is different. So at first I might like irk or in some defensive way, but what does that mean? So talk through the episode and then talk through the ripple effect both before and after of what that means for the story. And if it feels like we end up in a better place, then we will make that change. So we've already gone through a lot of that with the upcoming season. And I will say some of the things that are different is some of the stuff I'm most excited for.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a question from the chat from Havoc Maker saying, if you're taking, oh God, there, can you pull it up real quick? Did Tess know that Joel tried to kill himself, or is that something that only Ellie learns?
That's a good question. We've never discussed that. So now you're just asking for my interpretation, because there isn't like if you don't see it, then there's no fact. And it's
to
just
add to that, the Havoc Maker in Twitch chat asks, does Tommy and or Tess know Joel had attempted suicide, or was Ellie the only one who he opened up to about it?
I believe that Ellie, what we saw in the last episode, is the first time he's ever talked about
it. Wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
Talking a bit more about things that you probably can't talk about, right, regarding the future of it, Last is Part 2 versus Last is Part 1 in terms of how the themes could translate from game to TV show. I'm curious on if you guys have thought about Last of Us Part 2 is a video game thematically and what that game does as a video game versus what Last of Us Part 1 does. Because when I think of Last of Us Part 2 for me, I think a lot about Shadow Colossus as a parallel, where a lot of Last of Us Part 2, I'd say, works and is moving because you're the one that is taking place, or you're the one that is taking control of those actions, right? Like, you're the one that's killing a lot of people. You're the one that's playing as Ellie. You're the one that's, spoilers, playing as Abby, doing all these things. In a similar way that, for me, Shadow Colossus is a game all about taking control as a player and purely committing these acts because the game is asking you to, and then getting to the end being like, oh God, what have I done? Is that a thing that you guys have talked about yet in terms of Last is Part 2 and why it works as a game versus how that same story could work as a television show. Is that a thing that you guys considered changing up at all from that regard? Or is that a thing where it's like, you know, the translation could work just as well in the same way that season one, the first game, has worked very well translating it to TV?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love Shadow of the Colossus, and it's what it makes you feel. It's often very unique to video games. It makes you feel guilt and being complicit in destroying these beautiful creatures. It's never going to be quite the same. And I could talk about our process for season one, and you could probably translate that onto season two. You know, there's the winter sequence where you first play as Ellie. And almost every focus tester that got to that part says instinctively, oh my God, I'm Ellie, when they didn't know that was going to happen. And you watch them play differently. And there's something that's happened there that, again, I don't have the words to articulate it, but there's a certain like empathic connection that the player and the character have immediately. And I think for that kind of stuff, there's a bit more heavy lifting that has to happen with a TV show, that the way you shoot things, how long you spend with a character, how do you make the act of viewing it passively feel more like you're connected with that character? You're seeing it from their point of view. And that's why, you know, we placed Left Behind where we did, and we the way that the eighth episode, the David episode, was done in such a way so you feel like you're with Ellie more. And that's the kind of process we would apply for how the second game is structured.
Do you guys have you guys thought about what if the game, or what if the TV show catches up to where the game is, right? Like, if years from now we get the full story of part two and we get to the end of that story, is there a plan? Like, would you ever be down to make original content for the TV show because you've surpassed where the game's at?
I don't think so. I can tell you the what Craig and I want to do, and the deal we have is only goes up to game two. And that's it. And I purposefully wanted things to be that way because I didn't want to end up in a Game of Thrones situation where, like, now you're forced to do something you might not feel comfortable with. But we're talking about years from now, yeah. And who knows where my mind will be, or Naughty Dog's mind will be, or Craig's mind will be. So I can't definitively answer that question, but Kayla, right now, there's no plan to do anything beyond adapting the games.
With that, the idea of adapting a game to TV, a game that you created, and then a TV show you created with the help of others, of course. If you were to make a, if there was to be a show, and then you were adapting that show to a game, would that be exciting to you?
Make the Chernobyl
game. On some level, because I've never done that. So anytime you're doing something new, it seems thrilling. And I feel like there's a lot to learn in that. Just, again, seeing how Craig's mind was working and how he approached the adaptation process, it was thrilling. Anytime you see someone that's really good at something work and you get to see kind of the behind the scenes of it, I really enjoy that. But as you can tell, I haven't given that much thought because that's not in the cards for us right now. But yeah, sure, that could be exciting.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. I have a question for you. During the ad break, you brought up the Mario movie. Are you excited for the Mario movie?
Oh my God, I'm thrilled for the Mario movie. Sorry, PlayStation people, don't hate me, but I was a Nintendo fanboy when I grew up. My brother was the PlayStation guy. So I had the N64, he had the PlayStation. I'm a Mario diehard through and through. I've played like every mainline Mario game, completed it in any way you can complete it. And I'm stoked for the movie.
It looks so good. It looks so good. I watched that trailer like 100 times this weekend, man.
By the way, I took my kids to Super Nintendo World and got to do the Mario Kart ride with them, and they loved it. But I'm like, I don't think you guys have the appreciation of what this thing is. Like, you get to just experience it from a very young age. Like, I had to wait till I was in my mid-40s to do this.
Has it settled in, like, the impact of what I'd say this year is for video game adaptations? Like, of course, we've had, especially over the last few years, very good video game adaptations come out between things like you know, Sonic or Detective Pikachu or Arcane, and I was gonna say The Witcher, even though I know The Witcher is more off the book. But this year, us getting The Last of Us HBO show, which has again been very well received, and then getting the Super Mario Brothers movie, which, you know, is like that back to back feels insane for quality video game adaptations. Is that a thing that you've like had the time to sit and receive?
I haven't had a lot of time to reflect on it too much, but it is, that was one of my goals in wanting to do this, is I've been so disappointed with so many video game adaptations, and I feel like it just kind of colors the industry in this bad light, because people see a bad adaptation and I'm like, oh, that's what video games are. Mm. It's just like poorly written stories with a lot of mindless action. That in doing something that, again, has more heart or more care or more love from the people high up down for the source material, that we could kind of shift the thinking of how you do these things. And if you do it properly, that the audience will show up and they'll love it. And a new audience will show up as well and they'll love it. And the way they'll talk about it and revere it will help create more of these things. And they'll be like this kind of snowball effect. So I think that was already happening before even The Last of Us, like all the stuff you mentioned. Like when I saw Sonic 1, I was like, okay, this is not the story of the game, but they've captured, somehow they've captured the essence of the game. When I'm watching like the Dr. Robotnik fight at the end, I'm like, oh, it feels like I'm watching one of those boss fights, but it felt earned, like in a really cool way. And that's why I'm excited for Mario and more things that are coming. There's a lot of stuff coming from PlayStation production that I'm really excited to see.
Gran Turismo, Twisted Metal, let's go!
God of War! I was going to say, is there like any internal like competition where it's like, you know, they're making the God of War show. Is there like a, oh man, all right, that's probably going to be a banger too. Now we got to go back and forth. Because I feel like you guys, I don't know if you've talked about this, but Sony Santa Monica and Naughty Dog, I'm sure a lot of people will look at as like, oh man, these are the PlayStation like prestige. They're putting out these cinematic stories that sit with people, right? And you guys have this, I think, very fun and very cool back and forth. Is that going to shift into video game or into TV, do you think?
I'd be surprised if it didn't, because, you know, Corey and I banter quite a bit, sometimes publicly. But I know how hard these things are. So right now I'm like, okay, well, hopefully our show somehow helps you convince them to do a certain process or how to write it or whatever. But once things get going, you can bet there'll be a lot of bantering and like friendly competition we have with the games.
One of the last questions I have for you here, going back to the finale, with the opening scene with Ashley Johnson playing Ellie's mom, that is a scene that you've talked about in the past, like after Last of Us 1, as you had the idea of it. How close was what we saw to the original concept, and how much of that was more like, I want to get Ashley involved, and I want to have this moment between the Ellies?
Very close. There were also different versions of that story that, you know, some had more action, some less action. But it was always like the major beats of arriving at this farm, given birth while being infected, not sure you cut the umbilical cord at the right time, and then Marlene showing up too late and seeing this kind of friendship between Marlene and Anna. I'm reminded now, actually, because I've talked about it in an interview now, that there was a much more full version of this story that went more back in time, that was going to be made into a video game by Naughty Dog, by a different game studio, that Greg Miller introduced me to that studio, and we had talked to them for quite a while to do this thing, and then it just kind of fell apart. It didn't quite work out. But there's another reality.
Wait,
Anna.
Real quick, fuck you. What a cool thing that would have been for me. I'd be getting, if that game's great, I'm getting all the flowers. You know what I mean? I'd be the new Shannon Woodward.
Exactly.
I'd be now Shannon Woodward. Oh, I emailed Craig and Neil. I made all this happen.
That's so awesome. I loved the beautiful thematic relevance of Ellie literally being born into violence. You know, we talk about her being born in a violent world in this different time, but literally her coming out was like the push was almost from her mom, like having to kill infected right. Then it was like, that was just such a deep visual to me. Like, I think that's going to sit with me for a long time.
And just the, you know, the poetic beauty of that, it was Ashley Johnson, How amazing Ashley Johnson, like, she just crushed it.
Neil, I feel like for season one of Last of Us on HBO, you've talked a lot about it. You got the, at the end of the HBO show, you got the podcast with Troy, which has been great, you and Craig and Troy. Then you've got also like the PlayStation directors or deal makers.
Creator.
My apologies. Because we're winding down here, obviously, what haven't you been asked about? I always feel like, you know, for me personally, there's always, when I get interviewed or talk to somebody about something, there's like something I hope people will ask and then they don't. And I never get around to actually telling that. Is there something like that, even though you've talked this to death, that you think about with The Last of Us on HBO?
I don't think so. Nothing's coming to mind because people just have asked a lot of, like,
I've been talking about this for a long time.
A lot of salient questions.
I get, if you want to just, a softball that I don't hear, like, again, like, you know, people are people and everybody's just a person. I get all that shit. And you're, you know, definitely just one of us. You're just a gamer. And granted, you make some of the best games of all time and yada, yada, yada. But whenever you and me hang out or I run, you're like, we're just people. Was there a moment where you had to, like, calm down when you're hanging out with Pedro Pascal? Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you meet him for the first time, when you meet Bella, I mean, who's obviously young and up and coming, but I mean, Game of Thrones, like, such a breakout role for her. Was there a moment where you had to nerd out with all of them, or was it always just like, oh, hello, I'm Neil. I made the game. I'm very cool. I'm writing the show. No big deal. I'm going to the Grove.
I was a big fan of both of them. You know, I think I would have been maybe more nervous meeting Pedro if he wasn't so down to earth. And I think just the first time we hung out, we just kind of shot the shit and talked crap about some people that we know and from similar circles and old projects that, you know, things we would have done differently or whatever. And it just felt like another geek that cares about story and characters, and we could just kind of sit down and just talk. And that's the thing, when you do this like long enough, you realize, oh, we put up all these people on pedestals, but they're just people. They're just nerds like all of us, you know, just trying to make cool stuff. And sometimes you get lucky and it, you know, becomes popular culture and it goes really broad, but it really is often right place, right time.
Last question I have for you that I should have asked earlier, but the opening scene of this episode, we see this farmhouse, we see a tractor outside, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, are they tying this into the end of part two? And like, that wouldn't really make sense, or maybe it will, I don't know. But even going in, it was one of those moments where I'm like, is this the same house? Like, is this the same design? Are those connected at all, Neil?
We were watching it last night with Shannon Woodward, and Shannon made the same observation, like, oh my god, it's the same architecture as the farmhouse. Like, did you guys do that on purpose? I'm like, no, it just happened. Like, because geographically it doesn't make sense. One's in Boston, one's in Colorado. No, it was just we kind of wrote into the script as this, like, the farmhouse, and the set designer or production designer designed it that way.
I was back to the shadowy figure running away, where I was like, all right, guys, I think we're reaching. Like, it's not exactly the same farmhouse. Yeah, there's a tractor and it's a farmhouse, but it's a farmhouse.
But inside it looked, it was a little more.
There's this great thing that happened, you know, when you have enough things running in parallel, when you have enough setups and payoffs, then people start seeing them where they don't exist. And I remember with the first game, there was something that, like, I don't remember the exact line, but Ellie said something late in the story that Joel said earlier. And people are like, oh my god, it's so brilliant. She's like taking on his mannerism and she's starting to speak like him. Like, no, they're actually both just kind of speaking like me, and I didn't pay attention that I wrote the same line for both. But yeah, that's awesome. Totally thought that way the whole time.
You just gotta take credit. Like, you should, like, for that one you should have been like, oh yeah, that's where Ellie was born, and that's where eventually her soul is gonna die. Like, the connective tissue is there.
Neil, thank you so much for joining us today.
And one thing, no one's asked this yet. No one asked about the song that Anna sings to the baby.
No.
I don't think if enough people paid attention to it, because it's very soft when Marlene comes in and you can just hear her singing the song, and it's another aha song that I just loved. So there was an opportunity to get
which
that
one
in
is it?
The Sun Always Shines on TV.
Okay. There you go.
There you go.
Take that headline, VGC.
I love it. Neil, thank you for hanging out with us today. Thank you for working on the show and the games and for everything. Is there any parting words you have, and where can people find you?
Well, first of all, congrats to you guys and all your success. And it's been fun watching you all. So thank you for, you know, being good friends and just being pleasant fans to follow. Where can people find me? I'm on Twitter and Instagram, although I'm going to try to get off of social media now that the show is done. And
here we go. Fucking Hollywood Druckmann. You know what I mean? I'm going to have to go through an assistant to talk to him now. This sucks.
He deserves it, Craig.
Convince PlayStation to do another PSX, and I will be there in a heartbeat.
God,
live at the Shrine Theater. Thank you so much, Neil. Let us know in the comments below what you thought of season one of The Last of Us, what you hope we get in season two and beyond. And until next time, always look for the light.